McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit problematic.
News.
Will you design? Could I see you for a second?
We're gonna cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
Hi, my name is Jessica Kubiecki, and I'm a news editor at the McGill Daily. This week's edition of Unfit to Print will focus on the events of and following November 10th. November 10th was a big day for McGill. As the tuition protest concluded, 14 students entered the James Administration Building and occupied the office of Principal Heather Monroe Bloom. Around 200 demonstrators who had gathered outside of James Administration in support of the occupiers were confronted by police on bicycles. Later, riot police came onto campus and used pepper spray and tear gas to push students off campus. Following the presence of riot police on campus, students organized the event We Are All McGill that took place outside the James Administration Building on Monday. The event was aimed to create a space to reflect and share experiences of what happened on November 10th. We will first hear audio from an interview done by campus media with McGill's principal, Heather Monroe Bloom. Finally, we will conclude with audio from the We Are All McGill Open Forum and General Assembly that took place on Monday, November 14. All audio was recorded by news editor Aaron Hudson. We will now hear excerpts from an interview with Principal Heather Monroe Bloom and campus media, Le Daily, the McGill Tribune, and the McGill Daily.
And so I can't prejudge it. I actually wasn't on campus at the time. We do have emergency systems. We do have actually a number of broad communication mechanisms. And Thursday was an unusual day. We had somewhere between 15,000 and 30,000 students at the edge of our campus demonstrating. And we happened to be situated right across from the Premier's office. And so, of course, I want to understand what happened. But it was not a usual day. There was communication. It's also would seem to be that things moved very, very fast and changed very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't there that day. You're saying that you want to wait for the investigation to answer any kind of question on what actually happened.
And it's an internal investigation. So this is not just maybe I'll say a couple of things about it. Have you seen my releases? So you'll know that it's an internal investigation. It's an investigation of what happened on our campus, mm-hmm. and in our processes. And it is not a, clearly, it's not there to stand instead of any normal processes, disciplinary, legal, or otherwise. So if there are complaints that people have, those complaints can still be filed. If there are disciplinary measures that people feel should be taken, those can still be implemented. But my reason for moving quickly to appoint Professor Jutra as investigator and to have a December 15th deadline, it's a pretty intense, say, for him 1 month turnaround, is I want to get the facts understood as best as we can. It will be a public report when it comes out, and you'll certainly get it. Yeah.
Thank you.
My question is about the inquiry.
The investigation. Yeah. There is a difference, between an inquiry and an investigation.
So an investigation. So why was Professor Jutra chosen, and why was it chosen to be an internal as opposed to an external?
My interest as principal is that we learn from what happened to do the best that we can to not have that happen again. It was an abnormal day all around. It was an abnormal day in the city of Montreal, and it was certainly an abnormal day on the downtown campus, and it was disturbing, and a lot of people are hurting from what happened on Thursday. You know, my deepest desire is to do whatever we can to ensure that doesn't happen again. In that regard, I wanted someone who has a deep loyalty and concern for the university and the well-being of everyone in it, and yet who is known for impartiality, independence. He is a highly distinguished member, trained as a lawyer, has worked at the Supreme Court, He's a guy who's beyond reproach in his character. In a university, you know, we do a lot of things that depend on internal judgments. You know, the whole peer review system is us, you know, judging ourselves as a community. We have a very self-governed approach to our operations, and so choosing someone of the highest distinction, whose integrity is so well regarded, who has training to look at facts and make judgments, and who was willing to undertake to do this. He was the first person I thought of to do it, who's would be able to conduct it. So those are the reasons. He's got, you've seen the terms of my letter, the terms of reference for it. He's got complete autonomy. He doesn't report to me in the course of doing this investigation. The report will be released with findings and recommendations, and I have confidence that he'll serve the university. Not any one individual, not any one special interest group, but he will serve the university. That's the purpose of the investigation. He will have every freedom to call on whomever he wants to see whatever records or other things he wants. He will, I believe, but again, he's establishing his own procedures, which I think he'll announce later in the week, but he will have, I've asked for the full cooperation of the administration in giving him what he wants. My letter calls on every member of the community to cooperate with the investigation. I imagine that he'll make a widespread call for people to make submissions to him of, you know, videos, depositions, formal reports, and so forth.
So for the decision-making of choosing him as an individual, was mm-hmm. this a decision that you made?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So it was a unilateral decision?
It was my decision. It was my judgment that this was the way to proceed.
And will he be compensated for this?
No. Okay. I mean, he's a professor at the university, right?
So but no. Nothing?
No.
Additional.
With it. So there's nothing that Professor Jutra will learn that will identify any one individual.
Mm-hmm.
But that's different than talking about the security, talking about students, talking about people who weren't part of the university community, talking about the communication that happened with the police. So all of that will happen, but I actually felt it was very important that those who want to go talk and say what happened have immunity. Immunity with respect to what they tell Professor Jutra and what evidence they present to him. That doesn't prevent anybody from presenting the same evidence to someone else. Okay, so if you say you wanted to file a legal charge or you wanted to file a disciplinary complaint, you take your same evidence to, mm-hmm. or a complaint even, to someone else at the same time. This doesn't say everything else stops while this happens, but as principal in McGill, for me to take measures that affect the university, that may change some of our systems, that may look at problems here or there, I'm waiting until that.
Mm-hmm.
But I deliberately wanted to give immunity to those who are making representation, because I actually want to know what happened.
Okay.
But it's only immunity from information that Professor Jutra has. It doesn't prevent them from using that information anywhere else. Okay.
That was Principal Heather Monroe Bloom speaking with campus media concerning the riot police on McGill campus on November 10. Now we will hear from the event We Are All McGill, which took place a few hours after the interview with Monroe Bloom outside James administration. Monroe Bloom attended the event and sat in the front row.
It's our right, we'll stand, we'll fight. Peaceful protest, it's our right, we'll stand, we'll fight. Peaceful protest, it's our right.
So I'm really honored to have been asked to give this opening address. I'm going to give an account of what happened, based on what was reported in the campus media, as well as emailed out previously by the SMU, talking about why we're here, and suggest potential directions, offering two potentialities of where we can go as a campus after this. So, for those of you who don't know, on Thursday, 20,000 students marched from Bailey UCAM Station to Lou McGill College. It was the single largest student day of action that this province has ever seen, with 200,000 students attending. Also altogether peaceful. It went really, really well. By 4 o'clock, the demonstration finished and word circulated that we got a peaceful occupation of the fifth floor of the James Administration Building. A bunch of us heard this and kind of moved on to campus and have to try and support those who were there and find out what happened. We soon learned that security services inside had reacted violently, and accordingly, anxiety outside grew, the crowd grew, and came to include not just students, but faculty and staff who supported what was happening. We supported those inside. After some time, students tried negotiating their way into the building, first asking if a pair could go in and confirm the safety of those that they knew, ceding to a single individual before deciding that a camera would suffice to film what was happening before being returned outside, and all of that was denied. At some point, 20 to 30 students entered through the side entrance of the building and occupied the second floor for a short period. Soon after, we heard that the police had been called and students formed a human chain around the building to try and prolong negotiations inside. Bike police arrived, confronted students, and it's important to note that that students reacted after having been engaged. I want to clarify that. Upon the bike police's dispersal, riot police arrived through the Roddick and Milton gates, batting their shields. They approached students, hemming them in from both sides, an effort to try and push us off campus. They approached those first at the entrance to the building, pepper sprayed without warning, and pushed students back. At one point, I personally saw a student kicked in the face as he was sitting peacefully in protest. So, we were pushed off campus, effectively brutalized. And for a lot of people here, this is a moment of great anxiety, intentionally their first time that they've returned to campus since it happened on Thursday. What happened, we were pushed through the Milton gates, and then I guess charged upon. It's a pretty stirring experience. But after the fact, students organized and came together. They weren't silent, but decided they were going to take action against what happened and immediately schedule this event. I think it's a point of great strength that we need to rally upon. So, the intention of this afternoon is to create time and space for people to express and articulate what they experienced. Because this is a community issue and we need to work through this as a whole. We're not individuals here, but this is something that the wider McGill community has experienced and that we can build on together. I've been asked to speak, and I'd like to speak the fact that this is intentionally the first time, as I said, for a lot of people who have returned, that we offer them respect and that we not conflate differences of opinion over whether or not police intervention was the right thing to happen. With a lack of compassionate understanding that for where these people are at is a very vulnerable state, that we respect where they're coming from and take it into consideration. The second element of this, after the reprehensible events on Thursday that we'll talk about, is an attempt to try and build from what we experienced. What I find most moving is the way that people weren't silenced but have come together now to talk about this, because we're going to try and contextualize this. Students and faculty are going to talk about how this isn't just an isolated incident, but part of a much wider context and series of changes that have happened at this university over the last couple of years. That our university has changed from an educational institution that values the livelihoods of its students, faculty, and staff towards a very corporate-minded body that prioritizes rankings above all else at the expense of student life, the expense of accessible education. The expense of job security. And at the expense of even academic freedom. So we're going to talk about this, and freedom of speech. We're going to try and talk about how this isn't just an isolated incident to McGill, but part of a much wider series of reactions that students across the world have been taking against this in light of austerity measures.
I was telling you that I'm a professor in the political science department at McGill. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know exactly what legal rights student or faculty have to speak in which parts of the university at which times. And I'm sure there's limits. I'm sure that there are legal limits that we can't speak everywhere and in every place at every single time. Nor do I know exactly what the legal rights are of the university to restrict the speech that people have in different places and different times in this university. So I'm not here to talk about your rights. I'm here to talk about the nature of a university and an academic institution, an academic community. In fact, a university is an environment in which we want to develop the skills of how to learn to be active, engaged citizens in society at large. For that to be possible, it is important that people who are in positions of authority and power, and I include here both members of the administration and members of the faculty, it is important that we create an environment in which those who wish to speak are able to make their voices heard. This amongst my own colleagues, we have a diversity of views about the merits of MUNACA's demands. We have a diversity of views about the merits of the students' demands for lower, for keeping tuitions at the rate they are. In fact, in our own student body, I know that there are a diversity of views about these issues. The disproportionate reaction that the powers that be inflicted on our students. Let's help to set an example. Let's help to construct a more healthy dialogue and the possibility of dialogue between students, faculty, administration, and staff. Let's set an example right here, right now, for how dialogue is possible amongst diverse individuals, diversity of views, and also positions of power. Thank you.
Professor Mendelson, why are you here today?
I'm here because we know that people are hurting. We know that people were caught up in the event. Some students, some passers-by, some faculty and administrators. And so we really need as a community to come together and get by this. This event today, I think, is a good step in that direction. It is a chance for us as a community to meet, for people to express themselves openly, frankly, for us to show ourselves how an academic community meets and discusses an issue, and for us to enjoy the sunshine.
And how do you feel? Are you concerned that today's demonstration might escalate?
I don't think this demonstration is going to escalate. I'm looking around. I see people who are intent on listening to other people. I see people who are respectful. I've spoken to student leaders this morning. I'm aware of the preparations that went into this. I know that there's been good cooperation between the student groups and security, McGill security.
That was audio from the event We Are All McGill on November 14. And that is all the time we have today on Unfit to Print. My name is Jessica Lukowiecki, and I have been your host. Thank you to CKUT 90.3 FM and news editor Aaron Hudson, who produced and recorded all of today's content. And thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.